I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is a podcast about the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. It contains moments of violence, profanity, and uncensored racism. It may not be suitable for all audiences.
The men accused of murdering Ahmaud Arbery were able to walk free for 2.5 months after the shooting for a very simple reason. Local authorities decided they'd done nothing wrong. For 74 days, prosecutors and police found no grounds to charge Greg and Travis McMichael with any crime. 74 days. Now, it took the Georgia Bureau of Investigation 36 hours to bring murder charges against the father and son, and another 2 weeks to charge William Roddy Bryan. 74 days versus 36 hours. This is Buried Truths. I'm Hank Klibanoff.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org. Support for WABE comes from 100 Miles, a nonprofit committed to preserving Georgia's 100-mile coast. Protecting this critical coastal ecosystem takes all of us. Watch the stories of the innovators and future leaders who help keep our coast flowing at OurGeorgiaCoast.org.
Earlier in this podcast, I talked about the way the Ahmaud Arbery case was different from the other cases we investigate in the Georgia Civil Rights Cold Cases Project and in Buried Truths. Well, here's one way it's very similar to a lot of the racially motivated crimes from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. This case came very close to escaping all scrutiny. It came very close to being like so many, many other cases in the South's difficult history. Cases in which prosecutors, regardless of how much evidence they had or how persuasive the evidence was, would conclude that it just wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to bring criminal charges, murder charges, against someone they knew, or whose daddy they knew, or whose church they belonged to, or whose clavern of the Ku Klux Klan. They had no intention of seeking justice. But those cases existed before telephones were equipped with cameras, could be carried on a dashboard or in a pocket, or could establish truth in persuasive opposition to myths and lies, even those embedded in police reports. Now, this was a case in which all the cliches were actually true. Travis was holding the smoking gun, and Greg did have blood on his hands. How did they dodge criminal charges for 2.5 months? Well, you won't believe how many problems there are with this. For one thing, Greg McMichael had, at one time, worked as an investigator for the district attorney responsible for prosecuting the cases. Well, that set up an immediate conflict. The district attorney, Jackie Johnson, resolved that conflict by recusing herself, which was the proper thing to do. But two county commissioners in Glenn say they think she's been far more involved in the case than she's admitting to. All right, what's a county commissioner? The county has a board of elected officials, commissioners, who govern the county. They're in charge of public works. They're in charge of land use. They're in charge of a lot of things, including the county police department. These two commissioners say they spoke with police officers who were at the scene of Ahmaud's killing. And here's what the two commissioners said publicly. The police officers said they were ready to make arrests that Sunday afternoon in February, but the DA's office told the police not to arrest the DA's former chief investigator or his son. Jackie Johnson, the DA, hotly denies any suggestion that she tried to dead-end the case. Now, before we get into her denial, let's stop for a moment. We have a lot of DAs in this case, four to be precise, and it might be tough to keep them straight. First, a word about what a district attorney does. The DA in Georgia is a powerful elected official who supervises criminal prosecutions in a judicial circuit. Now, sometimes a judicial circuit is a single county, or it can be several less populous counties. The DA's office handles felony prosecutions, the most serious crimes, and has final say over whether a prosecution will move forward or not. Another thing you'll learn about the four DAs in this case is that the first three are white. And that's because, as my students' research shows, out of the 49 judicial districts in Georgia, only seven are led by black district attorneys. And all seven are in large urban or suburban circuits. In Glenn County, where Ahmaud Arbery was killed, there are no black prosecutors, no black judges, and only one black attorney. So back to Jackie Johnson, the Brunswick Circuit DA. As the first district attorney involved in the Arbery case, we'll call her DA number one.
I'm devastated by this. 20 years.
Here's what Johnson had to say about the allegation that her office short-circuited the case against the McMichaels. Johnson is speaking with WIFO, known as Big Dog Country in tiny Jessup, Georgia, just inland from Brunswick. Now, this was in May 2020, 3 months after Ahmaud was killed.
The police stated they want to make an arrest right away, but you advised them not to. Any truth to that?
No, that's absolutely not true. I was watching television Friday night, and I saw my face flash up there, and then I saw that quote, and I was just horrified because that's so far from the truth. It's just a straight-up lie.
Jackie Johnson even had her lawyer send the Glenn County commissioners a cease and desist letter, threatening both of them with defamation lawsuits. The commissioners, however, have not ceased or desisted.
For probably over the last couple of years.
Johnson cannot say enough about her distance from the case.
At the time, but I don't know what evidence was available, what evidence they had. I didn't go to the police department. I didn't look at the evidence because I knew I couldn't be involved in the case. I didn't want to know about the evidence, and I didn't ask about the evidence, and I didn't go and look at the evidence.
Jackie Johnson seems to be saying she stayed away from the evidence. Did you get that too?
I saw the video again and the first time last week.
While legal experts say that Johnson did exactly what she should have done when she recused herself, there's a problem with what she did after that. When a DA has a conflict of interest and can't prosecute a case objectively, she's supposed to notify the state attorney general that she's recusing herself. The attorney general then appoints a new prosecutor. But Johnson made her own decision about who should take over the Ahmaud Arbery case. On the day Ahmaud was killed, she went directly to George Barnhill, district attorney of the nearby Waycross Judicial Circuit. As DA number two, Barnhill was to play probably the most critical and questionable role in the Ahmaud Arbery saga. Now listen to this. Within 1 day of the shooting, to be precise, by noon, on the day after Ahmaud Arbery was killed, Barnhill had decided that the McMichaels had not committed a crime, and he has told the local police of his conclusion. Here's something else that a close reading of all the police information and the news stories reveals. Barnhill's suspicions about who was at fault in Ahmaud's death are all centered on Ahmaud Arbery. Barnhill tells a local reporter that he's ordered toxicology reports on Ahmaud, not on either of the McMichaels nor Brian, because in Barnhill's words, there was some behavior that warrants explanation. I want to get more information on the deceased. Well, the two toxicology reports, both dated in March, showed that Ahmaud's remains were tested for alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, amphetamines, barbiturates, various opioids like heroin, even sedatives like Valium and Xanax. And the result in every case was negative. Ahmaud Arbery was clean. The record shows no indication that Barnhill made any effort to make a public correction of his mistaken presumption. But Barnhill didn't even wait for that report to declare the McMichaels and Roddy Bryan innocent. Follow me here. Ahmaud is dead by about 1:15 in the afternoon. Police arrive at the scene. They take Greg McMichael's statement. Now, there has to be some conversation between the police and the district attorney's office. At some point, Jackie Johnson has to have enough information to recuse herself from this. And then it goes to Barnhill. Well, Barnhill couldn't possibly have been engaged in the case until late Sunday afternoon or early Sunday evening. Then by noon the next day, he thinks that Ahmaud and only Ahmaud should be implicated in his own death?
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I mean, it's hard to know what evidence he could have gathered overnight. Maybe the so-called police report, in which the only version of that account was Greg McMichael's. Maybe he had Roddy Bryan's video. But how was DA number 2, Barnhill, able to investigate and reach such a quick decision that everyone was innocent except Ahmaud Arbery? Then, are you still with me here? Barnhill hangs on to this case for 6 weeks, and then he decides to leave it. Now, it was widely reported that he recused himself because his son was working for DA number 1, that's Jackie Johnson, and that Barnhill's son, while working on her staff, had also worked with Greg McMichael. Well, Barnhill denied that he had a conflict and denied that that was the reason he was leaving the case. He said he decided to quit because of criticism from Ahmaud's family. Barnhill, as DA number 2, didn't leave the stage without doing something even more extraordinary than deciding overnight that Ahmaud's death was not a crime. On his way out, he wrote a 3-page letter to the county police explaining why the McMichaels had done nothing wrong. Barnhill wrote, I appreciate there is immediate pressure on your department as to the issue of arrest. Since I have already given you an initial opinion the day after the shooting, I feel I can still comment on this limited issue." Barnhill gave the Glynn County Police Department several reasons, including this one. He says that the three men were, in his words, following in hot pursuit a burglary suspect with solid first-hand probable cause in their neighborhood and asking / telling him to stop. It appears, he goes on to say, that their intent was to stop and hold this criminal suspect until law enforcement arrived. And then he adds, "And under Georgia law, this is perfectly legal." And then Barnhill concludes, "We do not see grounds for arrest of any of these three parties."
"So we need you, because it could happen in Brunswick, Savannah, Atlanta, Valley."
"We've looked, but we've had a hard time finding anyone who thinks Barnhill's letter was a good idea, including many of the people of Brunswick."
"I stand with you in solidarity. I came really to say one thing. We want Barnhill and Jackie Johnson's job and anybody complicit in the murder and cover-up of Ahmaud. They must go. Say it after me. They must go."
That was from a Justice for Ahmaud Arbery rally in Brunswick in May 2020. And here's what Atlanta law professor Mike Mears, a longtime death penalty litigator, told us. He has published books on criminal procedure and on the state's death penalty.
"I don't know what was going through Barnhill's mind, but I certainly looking at the record as public and what I've seen on paper, he just doesn't seem to understand the law unless there's some ulterior reason for wanting to write this off and sweep it under the carpet."
Anyway, as I said, a growing number of people, locally and nationally, well, they were aghast that Barnhill had taken it upon himself to exonerate the McMichaels and Roddy Bryan. And that included Jim Barger, the St. Simon's lawyer you met in episode 2. Now, Barger is an avid hunter, and he knows guns and ammunition, and he raises this point about the shooting.
"You know, one of the things that came out in the hearing that I don't think people have picked up on enough is the type of firearm used to kill Ahmaud Arbery. It was a Remington 870 pump action shotgun. So you have to pump, manually eject the shell, pulling it back and then forcing it forward three separate times, ejecting each shell and reloading each new shell each time you shoot. And if you read Barnhill's letter, he makes it seem like, well, maybe the gun just went off because Ahmaud was pulling on it. And then he focuses on everything that Ahmaud was doing, not the sociopathic, psychotic act of loading that gun with buckshot. But he never mentions the fact that it's a pump shotgun and that it would be almost impossible for there to be at least a second and third shot that was instigated by Ahmaud Arbery."
In season 1 of Buried Truths, we pointed out that white men who killed black men in the South once had a secret password that kept them out of jail. All they had to do was say self-defense. Police and prosecutors would nod and say, well, of course it was self-defense, even in a case that clearly was a murder. In the South, the white reflex to believe in pervasive black criminality was so ingrained in us by just about everything we read and heard, sometimes most loudly inside the home. We were racially conditioned to accept a white person's alibi that he killed the black person only in self-defense. That secret password, as I call it, is no longer foolproof. In most American courts in 2020, if you plead self-defense, you're going to have to prove self-defense. If Travis McMichael and his two co-defendants don't make a deal with the state, if they don't enter a guilty plea and avoid a trial, you'll almost certainly hear that self-defense argument. The jury will just have to figure it out. Who was the threat to whom? Who was defending himself? And who was attacking? Here's Mike Mears again.
Self-defense usually does not apply when the person who is trying to raise self-defense initiated the encounter. You can't pick a fight and kill someone and say, I was in self-defense.
There's something else in the letter from DA number 2, George Barnhill, that exonerated the three white men. He invokes a Civil War era law in Georgia governing citizens' arrest because, he says, the McMichaels and Roddy Bryan were following a burglary suspect, and he puts that word in quotes. But let's go back to the incident report. You remember the original police report? Did the police say anything about a burglary? No. In the space on the incident report, where the police officer describes offenses reported, Officer Brandeberry wrote criminal trespass, not burglary, as D.A. Barnhill says in his letter. Well, why does that matter? Well, in fact, it could be huge. We turn to Ron Carlson, a constitutional scholar at the University of Georgia School of Law. He's an emeritus professor, and Carlson tells us why a citizen's arrest defense just doesn't work in the Arbery case.
Prosecution's argument against that may well be that a major offense like a felony has to occur in the presence of and in view of the citizens who are trying to make the arrest. The argument by the prosecution will be that did not happen here. They simply had a suspicion, did the McMichaels, that the jogger may have been involved in a crime. And at most, that might have been a misdemeanor trespass, but no major crime committed in the presence of the McMichaels will be the argument made by the prosecution in this case.
Did you hear Professor Carlson say that the felony has to occur in view of the citizen trying to make the citizen's arrest? Well, what exactly did citizen Greg McMichael see? He saw Ahmaud Arbery running down the road. McMichael told the police that Ahmaud looked like the same man who was videotaped walking around inside the house under construction. So he and Travis grabbed their guns and went after him. So now follow this, because it boils down to this. There was no felony. So no felony, no probable cause to chase Ahmaud. And no probable cause to chase Ahmaud, then there's no defending this as a citizen's arrest, at least not legitimately. And absent that defense, the McMichaels, well, they become lawless vigilantes with nothing on their side but guns and a pickup truck. So DAs number 1 and number 2 may have thought they could deal with Ahmaud's killing quietly, with no outside interference. It hasn't worked out that way. First, Georgia's Attorney General, the top legal officer in the state, asked federal and state authorities to investigate the ways the two DAs handled the case. This is a letter from Deputy Attorney General Blair McGowan. I'm writing to request that the GBI open an investigation into a case involving possible prosecutorial misconduct by the offices of the district attorneys of the Brunswick and Waycross Judicial Circuits. The Attorney General is concerned that the actions of these offices may have constituted unprofessional conduct or other crimes. Let's see, who else thought Barnhill acted inappropriately, even unethically? Well, how about the National District Attorneys Association, which calls itself the voice of America's prosecutors? Now, I don't know how often this 70-year-old organization, which represents 5,500 members and advocates for district attorneys, stops its work to criticize its own members. But they sure did in this case. Here's what they said. We strongly disagree with District Attorney George Barnhill's decision to share his opinion of whether Greg and Travis McMichael should be arrested after he decided to recuse himself from the case. They even held out the possibility that Barnhill did it intentionally to derail the prosecution of the McMichaels and Brian. Here again is what they said. These actions can have an intended or unintended ability to influence potential grand jurors or trial jurors, while also making the new special prosecutor's job to objectively seek the truth significantly more difficult. I want to tell you that we've asked DAs 1 and 2, Jackie Johnson and George Barnhill, to discuss with us the events that transpired during the 74 days. Administrative aides to both said they would not meet with us for interviews. So, just to keep tabs on who's coming and who's going, District Attorney Number 2 has now recused himself. Tom Durden of the Atlantic Judicial Circuit becomes District Attorney Number 3 in mid-April. When the video of the shooting went viral on May 5th, Durden asked the GBI to investigate the case. A few weeks after he got the case, however, DA Number 3 was gone. The Attorney General announced that he was transferring the matter again, saying Durden's small office didn't have the resources to handle a prosecution of this magnitude. So on May 11, 2020, a few days after the arrests of the McMichaels, the Attorney General turned to DA Number 4, Cobb County District Attorney Joyette Holmes. She lives 300 miles from the coast in metro Atlanta.
I certainly have a sense of community and know what the expectation is of me, not because I'm the district attorney on the case, but because I'm an African-American female.
Now, that's from an interview with NBC News not long after Holmes was assigned the case. She took it before the county grand jury in late June and says that the jurors deliberated for 10 minutes before they indicted the McMichaels and Brian.
Three men officially indicted on felony charges in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery in a Brunswick neighborhood.
The indictment was big national news, especially in Jacksonville, which is only 70 miles south of Brunswick. And the TV news there, especially News 4 Jax, has heavily covered the Ahmaud Arbery story since early May.
The family is grateful. They were unable to be here today, but we called them as soon as we got the indictment returned today.
Now the McMichaels and Roddy Bryan are in jail, awaiting trial. But there's this nagging question. Did the first two DAs in the case try to cover up the killing? Now, most of Brunswick's black community, and many in the white community, would tell you yes. The DAs deny it. For 74 days, local folks were deeply concerned that no one would ever be held accountable for Ahmaud's death. And for 74 days, no one was.
Coming up on the next episode of Buried Truths.
Everybody's called me about him being in my class. Even people from down there was like, you remember Greg Michaels when you was? I was like, yeah, do I have to remember?
Buried Truths is produced by WABE Atlanta. Our senior producer is David Baraswain, writing by Hank Klibanoff and Richard Hallix. Our executive producers are J.N. Barry and John Hawes. Special thanks to Scott Wolfel, Stephen Key, Alita McCalman, Kendall Foote, and Raphael Fetrot. Hank Klibanoff is a former newspaper reporter and editor and co-author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Race Beat. He's also a professor at Emory University, where he directs the Georgia Civil Rights Cold Cases Project. We want to extend a special thanks to the Emory students who helped with this season of Buried Truths. Jake Bush, Hannah Cherick, Jordan Flowers, Cameron Katz, and Sage Mason spent the summer of 2020 investigating the Ahmaud Arbery case. Thanks also to student Rowan Thomas, whose earlier research contributed to this season. Visit buriedtruths.org to find lesson plans based on prior seasons of the podcast and discussion questions for your next podcast club. You can also sign up for our newsletter and That's where you can support Buried Truths by making a donation. Again, that's at buriedtruths.org. On social, we're at Buried Truths Pod. Please look us up and follow us. And if you haven't already, take a moment to rate the show on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. It'll help more people find this important podcast. Thank you for listening to Buried Truths.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of mysteries. Are ghosts real? Is that yogurt expired? Hey, the unknown can be scary. But when you donate to WABE, you know where your money is going. Your gift supports the journalism that keeps you informed and the programs that pull back the curtain on complicated stories. Help us make the world less mysterious. Become a member now. Go online to wabe.org/donate, and thanks.